Tomáš Fulajtar to you. MT Marathon is the place where research meets industry. So this is our first invited or keynote talk. And Tomáš comes from Moravia IT, a large Czech but functioning globally language service provider or localization company. So we'll learn how our MT systems are put to use in a real producing setups and big companies. Yep. So please go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I would like to welcome you all on my presentation. I was present 2 years ago in the MT Marathon, and it was a huge experience for me. So I am happy to be here after 2 years and be able to share something about how the industry is actually doing the machine translation. As I already told you, I was involved in machine translation 2 years ago. I was quite new, and I came here and started to learn. I focus on Moses systems of management, such systems and research, how it can be implemented in our company. Other than that, my experience is longer, and I spent most of the time on localization, doing working as a software engineer on different platforms and different projects. Let me share with you what will be the focus on today's presentation. First of all, I would like to talk more about something about the machine translation ecosystem, how actually it is in the world, and as I would like to share something about the industry, I will mention a few basic things about the localization itself, because this is tightly connected. Then, hopefully, most interesting part is the real challenges in the machine translation applied on the real world. And I will share you with you some case studies, testimonies showing if we were successful or not, or what are the challenges there. I would like to mention also some open topics which are not solved yet, and we look forward to share them with you. So, MT ecosystem. I wanted to show you something about the parts of the MT world. If I look into you, I guess that most of you is actually from the red circle. Is there anybody from LSP area, like me? One, two, yeah. Or translation agencies, or that world? I believe that they are, at least when I read the list of participants, that they are people from the commercial development, right? Maybe not presented today, but we have talked about neural networks in MT, right? So there will be some people even from that era, and I am not aware about the in-house MT owners, which are companies which actually have their own solution. They don't sell it, but they are happy users of it. Of course, some of those areas overlaps. But today, what I can tell you is about the last language services providers. Well, it all started in the early 90s, where actually IT IT became dominant and the companies started to sell products not only in the US but also worldwide, and they have to really sell it to customers in non-English speaking countries. So from those days it has evolved to the very distinct and very very complex industry. The characteristic of the industry is that it deals with a variety of the customers, different content, different languages. You can imagine that it's close to 200 languages today, and they are using the variety of computer-aided translation tools. Where Moravia stands, we are a global company, and as you can see from the numbers, now we have close to the 1,000 members, employees. But what's interesting is actually if you can imagine how many translators you need to handle, for example, such number of languages. So we have 5,000, more than 5,000 people providing the translations for us. And also, as you can see, most of the languages are covered with machine translation. Last but not least, the computer-aided tools. In fact, there are many in the industry, so you have to deal with the many of them. It's not just the as dominant environment as, for example, on operating systems. So that's another part of what I am talking about. Before I move forward to details, I just wanted to show you some growth in our internal usage of the MT. There are no exact numbers because I can't provide you the exact, but it's in millions of words and higher. And you can see that 2 years ago there was certain amount, but then it's grow up by multiply of 10, and then it's growing again. Our estimation is it will be like 30% bigger this year than the previous year. Now I will tell you something about the localization. Is anybody? I guess that the LSPs are very familiar with that, but basically, when I was talking about when it was born, actually, it all started when the translation memory has been developed, and the first product called Trados Translators Workbench was put into the market. And it's a simple fact that it's actually just the database containing segments of translated content, and this simple thing allowed us to actually build computer-aided translation tools which can handle translation and can leverage the memory of the early translated strings. They are listed some basic concept and basic tasks for such tools, and I would like to mention the analysis, where you basically have the sources and the translation memory allows you to compute the matches for the segments of part of the segments. And those can be then leveraged, so you can receive the translation. What are the advantages or disadvantages. Some of them are pretty obvious. It can really work well in the long-term projects where actually the product is evolving slowly and you have a lot of memory back, and it can, for example, reach 70% of the whole area you want to translate. So that's really helpful. It even, you know, allowed the basic things like keeping the consistency, which is one of the most important thing if you want to keep the quality and if you want to do not harm the translation. Imagine if you have the operating system and the terminology must be kept same. It's also one of those biggest disadvantages that you have to mostly manually maintain the translation memory and keep the translation, for example, keep the terminology updated if the terminology has changed. And it can change pretty quickly, and it can be very serious, and that makes the whole process non-intuitive and so on. I have also put here the last comment about a thing which is maybe not obvious, but you can imagine it as the n-grams or something like that, and if you have long sentences and your matches are just not for complete sentence, you are still not getting fluent, or I would say consistent translation. Comparing to machine translation, we can translate even unseen content. That's obvious, but very important. Also, we can achieve consistent output in terms of the quality or of the repeatedness of the process. It can be even better than in a translation memory. And the obstacles, the problem is really different quality for the different languages, and also you can't easily transfer or easily adjust the translation to the different domain. Now, actually, how we are combining those two technologies together. If you see on the screen, the translation memory has still a very huge impact, and that's the first step where we actually try to do the analysis and match as much as possible of the content, and you receive the different levels of the matching. And the threshold here is about usually about 75%. What's less? It's actually high. Well, we call it low fuzzy matches, and that's unlikely that human translators can clean it up without huge effort. So we can then put there the machine translation and perform the translation just from scratch. So basically, if I return back a bit, why then use the MT? We have the DMs, we have the other things, but the world has changed a lot since 90s, and there are new challenges, which means that, for example, the development process, as you know, we have online tools and everything, so it has moved to the more agile, where actually even developers or all the content creators, they are creating the content every day, and you have to deal with that. You have to provide translation on daily basis, right? That also means that it's easier to create content, so it's much more content to be translated. And you also need the online translations, right? For example, for the support, for the chat. And one of the very important is the is that you want to drive the level of the quality of the output document, because for certain content it's not necessary to have it perfect. You can even do gisting, right? And as we are in the business, and short turnaround is the necessary thing, everybody is trying to make the turnaround time lower. That leads us to the real challenges of applied MT. Technology, machine translation is ready, but there is a path how to actually implement and integrate it to the localization workflow, where you can see you have the translation memories, a long established set of computer aided translation tools. So first step is actually to connect it together and to allow efficient post-editing or other manipulation with the machine translation output. Once you have it, you have to somehow measure what's the impact of the machine translation on the whole process, if it is good or not, with the several ways to measure it. And then, if you put it globally, I will show you also how we deal with the impact of machine translation on the business itself. So for the integration, there are basically like two kinds of approaches and the sections. One is actually for batch tools or file-oriented approach, which is kind of universal. We have tool called MT services, which can you can put there the source of the text, and it can translate it. You can choose whatever machine translation technology we have, and that's it, right? It's simple. The other thing is that you work with the customers, and usually they are locked into some workflow, into some tools, so you cannot. And they demand also that they prefer some tools, so you can also update the tools to allow MT. Many of tools have already the native support for that. Let's say connectors, and if not, then it's up to you actually to develop some. For example, we have one connector for the Moses, and it's connected to the MMSource cloud environment. At the moment, there are a lot of actually public APIs, but the world is not standardized yet. But in some terms, it is better than before. I would like here to mention the importance of translation memory exchange format. That's the standard developed as XML for saving, storing the translation memory files, and it has important role because it works as a glue between interconnecting systems, and it's probably one of the famous formats. How we measure the impact of MTE? My colleague talked in the first presentation a lot about the estimations, about the quality. We have chosen just two metrics for the evaluation. One is the Meteor for machine contribution, and another one is the Red Ball, which is our customized translation error rate, and we use it as metrics to show us the human human effort for the translations. I have some slides here to show you that actually not we are not only measuring or showing the score, but we are also trying to measure the distribution of the segments, and we have simply four categories, and it tells us something more about the quality. You can see the huge red, but in red ball, for example, the garbage, or how would we name it, is much lower. So for us, it's important to keep both and be able to compare it. This is another way how to perceive the quality, and it shows another important thing, and it is the segment length. I don't know if you can see the numbers, but if you move to the right, then the sentence is longer. And again, the colors are same as on the previous screen. So the first is for the length. So for example, this is from 1 to 3 words, and then there is the count of the sentences. So you can see in the middle there is that's the mean. So usually most of the sentences are actually about 10 or 15 strings long. But actually, okay, in this case we have very very much long the longest on the right part, which means that this is the documentation, and documentation and containing a lot of internal tags and so on. So that was the automatic way of measure the machine translation. Still, the important part is the human evaluation. Actually, we have also two solutions. One solution came from the thing that there is always, even not on the MT part, but there is always some quality checks before you deliver the translation, final translations. So that means that we have the simple Excel sheet processing workflow where users can select the rank the quality. It's similar like what's on the other evaluation. You have 4 points and you assign the quality there. The advantage is really it can work offline, so you can imagine the number of the translators. Not many of them are living in the online world, so it's easy solution when you can they can work offline without being connected to any online tools, right? We are We are also looking forward for the new and raising standards, I would say, or common or advanced systems like the Tausis dynamic quality framework, which is actually was born this year, and we are evaluating also the VMT tools. And I look really forward for the presentations or for the posters, because there are several other tools being will be presented. I have also screen of example how the phases of the machine translation together to summarize where are the important parts. So you can see that, for example, the human review is happening even in the preparation of the whole process. Usually the manual evaluation or automated evaluation is not enough to give the certain that it's fine. It's also happening at the end. And usually if the project is running for a long time, those post-production analyses are helping to actually with the another round of preparation, for example, the empty engines and so on. Last of this section is how we then negotiate actually the price, or how we measured all the things, how we decide the impact. Basically, this is one of the challenges, because we are moving from or everybody is able to translate on Google, right? So people think, oh, that would be free. That's easy, but they think also that machine translation is bad, right? Why? Then it can be free. But if you have it inside really complex environment in a localization, it's just part of our workflow. We think it's as a productivity tool. So basically, we have to cover all the aspects together to deliver it as a whole solution. Another thing is that, you know, the quality is just one point, but the turnaround and the speed is another point. That's very important those days, because of the amount of the translation coming every day. Any questions for this section or for any previous sections?
I might have one question, and that's on like the quality. You've mentioned the human annotation, the ranking, and you've said that you are giving these texts to users. So does that really mean that your customers, or some of them, pre-evaluate whether they want to accept some machine translation or not? Or is that like internal evaluation before
That's the internal evaluation. Of course, you share. It depends on the level of the project. It can be just the pilot where you are actually delivering a prospect of what can be done. Then it's up to customer. But if we just deliver the whole solution, we do it internally, and it helps us to select the best way actually to deal with the localization.
Yeah, and then once the segments are given to your translators, it helps them in the environment, and there is so there is no direct way from MT to the customer. There is always some human post editor at least.
Yeah, if it can be if we just do the raw empty, then it can be like straightforward, pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So some of your customers also just buy the empty without any human.
Yeah, you check. can see it more in the next slides. Okay. So it's you can imagine everything basically from whatever content you have. Mostly everything is now being translated and localized. If you imagine the world as the whole, and yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Then the case studies. There are many different, as I told, many different things, but I have three of them I wanted to share with you. I have no names of the customers here. So I'm talking, this is, for example, just to give you an idea, this is for a company doing backup and recovery software and systems like that. The challenges here are pretty common on many of the customers. That's why I put it on this slide. So they want to translate more than wanted to cut the costs and also have the shared turnaround time. So basically what we did here is that we worked with client to understand what is the desired quality for the content type. For example, it can be different for the documentation and for the software UI, where it's much more sensible for the mistakes or for the precise terms. Then based on this, we actually developed two ways. One is for the documentation, where we did the machine translation and the post editing, and for the knowledge base, we applied the raw empty, basically. We are always choosing the best of our available empty technologies to be appropriate for the purpose, and in this case, the Microsoft Translator Hub solution should to be best. And at the end, when we look into the outcome, it really works well in such case, and there was certain reduction cost. And actually, as the challenge was improved turnaround time, over time we see the increase of the cost and of the time. The second case study is the quite different. It's a company doing the automotive diagnostic tools. And here the challenges were a bit different. They have the firm, they have the budget and they want to stretch it, but otherwise it was similar, apart from that actually the source content was good quality in terms of consistency and other things. You can imagine for the software part that you have display, and the display shows all the controls on the one screen. It cannot be enlarged, and basically when you it's not like the in the software industry when you have the auto layouts and stuff like that. Everything is really hard to actually translate. If you, for example, translate to German, which has a lot of compounds, and the automotive terminology is one of them where it's really prevalent. So the thing is that the translators, or they are using a lot of shortcuts instead of motor, they use just an empty dot and a lot of dots and stuff like that. This actually showed one of the outcomes that for the software content we couldn't reach the quality, expected quality, and it led to the actually process of improving the source part. Similarly, as on the previous case, we also tested the or tried to understand the quality level, and in this case, the focus was on terminology. So for the documentation and the technical parts, we improved it by using our terminology tool. That leads to the thing that it was available to use the post-editing and like machine translation connected with post-editing even on that very specific domain. It's also interesting to say that the Moses was more successful than its competitors. What I didn't mention here and what's important, I would really, as the main point for this, I would say that what's also the source is important. If you have a bad source, then you can use a lot of effort and the result won't be excellent. There are even, you know, methodics how to actually write the source to be good food for the machine translation. And I don't see much works on it, but basically, I don't know. And it's also hard because that's one of the inputs you have, and it's one of the hardest to change, actually, as from the provider side, because that's what they have, and they want just simply the best translation or whatever translation they want. The last case study is for the software giant, the biggest giants, and the challenges apart where actually we have to deal with the huge amount of content and huge amount of languages. You can imagine hundreds of languages or even close to 200 languages. This is the part of the company which is doing the support, technical support, and knowledge base management, stuff like that. Of course, they want to grow the content without adding more money to the budget. So, even for those high numbers, it's a very similar approach to the first test case study. We do the full post-editing on the high-profile content and the low light post-editing on the standard. As the numbers are huge, even optimization of the translation memory helped a lot, because in the numbers it's like 70% of the whole content. So still, any percentage up is great achievement and helps a lot. From the numbers, you can see the amount of translations we have done. You can see that the translation memory leverage is quite high, but still, it means almost 30% is going through the MT, either fully post-edited or light post-edited. The light post-editing means that the translators are actually changing the translation if it's really bad quality, and they don't try to rewrite it completely, because the target quality is that it should be understandable. You can see many pages on the support online that are translated in this way, and I believe that they are understandable. They do what they actually want. They were created for. What are the open topics, or what's still not solved yet from our point of view? And we look forward to be part with that, to help it resolve, is the empty prediction or the estimation, which is the which is one of the important thing. I saw that there was only one person who is doing research on it here. Still, the metrics, as we saw in the previous presentation, there are a lot of them, and we sometimes find it hard to actually make it human-like, more human-like, or more understandable by humans, because as you saw, the gap between the metrics and then the business negotiations, there must be something which connects them together. Many languages are still not very successful. Maybe they are successful for research, but in the production where you are fighting with the humans, the many languages are still subpar compared to it. But the way is that we can't stand with that. We have to improve it. Basically, the amount of content is enormous. So, you know, humans can't do that. So the challenges are here, at least from our point of view. We use the pure or different technologies, but really look forward for the syntactic features of the machine translation. So let me summarize what I told you today. There are several challenges. I'll talk about them. I presented the solutions which are using in our environment, and how we do the integration, how we measure the impact of the quality. I shared with you some case studies, and I'm really happy to be here to participate in the MT marathon and get more from research side. Also, I'm open to give you all the information about how the industry goes in that part. We are getting a lot from researchers, so we are wanting also to get something, make something back.
Start with thanking Tomáš for his interesting lecture. Or, you know, I don't know. And now to the question. So, yeah.
Hi. You compare Moses with the MS Translator Hub quite
yes.
a lot. Can you tell us a bit about what the differences are and how much the relative costs are and the amount of effort that you have to put into for each of those and why you choose one and mm-hmm. or the other?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They are actually more aspects than just if you measure in the blue score or in the other things. We also have to take into account the amount of strings of content we want to deliver in the certain time. And also the other aspect is, for example, the retraining time. If you want to change quickly or enhance the engines. So that's one of the factors. Usually the blue score itself, it's, at least in our experience, it's not very different. So, but for us, it's not the complete story, you know, this. So, does it help?
So which wins when you want like fast turnaround time, and which?
It really depends, you know. There are also the other things. For example, we are sometimes the lower sources of the content to train the engines. That's another aspect, and that's where, for example, the commercial solution wins because it's available in many languages, and especially when there are new projects and customers have no content, there is no other way, basically. We try to choose the best technology, but sometimes you have such hard limits, basically. I see a lot of improvements in Moses, for example, in the decoder, in the multi threads. So that's one of the way we are really interested in. Other thing is that you have to put it on the real hardware. That's another kind of expenses, right? But the real benefit, for me, the real benefit of Moses is that you can customize. You can you can fit it more independently into workflow.
So, any other questions? Well, I actually have two myself. So, one is on data. When you are talking to your customers, naturally there are many data sets where they cannot even think about releasing those. Mm-hmm. But still, do you always ask, and could you share your data with the academia, for example, through Taos data or however?
Mm-hmm. I mean, like advising customers to
release data whenever data. They can, mm-hmm. because that will help. Well, it will help other customers, and it will help also their competitors for sure. Mm-hmm. But it will help the field overall, and it will help researchers.
That's an interesting thing, and usually the data are not really public, and sometimes they are even very very specific. Yeah. It would be a good idea, you know, we can ask, why not? Yeah.
So I don't expect a big win. I don't expect many customers agreeing to this, but still, like, if you introduce the habit of asking, mm-hmm. then after a decade, suddenly they might start answering yes.
it might be part of kind initiative, right?
Yeah.
But it must be first, they would ask, is anybody else already did it? You know, or my competitor, is the competitor doing that or not?
Well, some have done that.
Yeah,
sure,
I know
because
that
Taos is now.
The Taos has a lot of content like that.
So you can answer yes.
Yeah, but maybe the question is not maybe like this, but then, for example, how this will be maintained? You know, there will be a lot of content, and for example, Taos is doing a great thing to collaborate and then keep the data updated. But it's huge work, I would say. And even as for it's huge work to manage manage actually the data.
If the data is out there in the public domain, moderated some way, like not the public domain in the licensing sense, then definitely researchers will get to that and they will find ways how to clean it automatically or so. So this task should not be the blocker, like being afraid of the cleaning or of the maintenance. That should not prevent us from collecting the data.
I guess that really Taus is the good organization or good way to doing that, because he is actually above or he stands apart from the competitors or, you know, apart from that. So for us it would be always like hard or, you know, we are open to clients, so we want to do as much as possible for them. And if they say no, then no.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, just please keep asking. That's my only wish. And the second question, that's about world level. So you've mentioned that you use various MT engines and you use various CAD tools, and you adapt many of those to the needs of each of the individual customers. So I wonder, to what extent do you go beyond or below world level? So in the inputs that I know, for example, from KDE documentation or whatever, there suddenly can appear ampersands within words to highlight that some of the letters has to be underscored in the menu or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's just one particular example of what ugly notation can due to the input that is then fed to the machine translation system. There are many, many other things. So I was curious about what specific things do you do yourself, or you know that some of the tools do below world level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, the content, especially for the documentation, is contains markup. Yeah, a lot of markups, like that this is the UI, this is something like that. They have been effort actually to standardize or deal with the markups. One of them is actually the M4 log, where actually you just eliminate them and translate without it completely, and then put it back based on the word alignments and so on. It's kind of successful. It works well for us, but also we want to move forward, like to understand, for example, that this is really UI and it has to be contained in somewhere in a terminology. But that's another level, and how to connect it with the MT is another thing. I know that Moses has the XML notation, for example, right? But there is multitude of semantics connected, and it's very specific for each customer. So you have to provide solution for each customer.
Yeah. So I understand the complexity of XML tags or any other markup, but still your answer was at the level of tokens, so to say. Uh-huh. Occasionally these markups, these tags appear within words, but well, since you have not mentioned anything specific, I still assume that you do not do anything to like retrieve these markup
you
symbols.
You mean, for example, the numbers or stuff like that, right? Or even sub level, right?
But perhaps it's not that frequent overall in the data, but still it's too diverse. So the ampersands to highlight the menu shortcuts. So, for example, for these, do you if you spot them in some of your customers' input, do you have a tool that removes them automatically before you feed it to MT and before you compare it to the translation memory, or you just take the word with the ampersand?
Yeah, if it is, we can take it, we can use it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't do anything specific.
There is no clean solution, so you have to you have to deal with that, and you can accept it as is, and it's in some ways it's misleading, but you have to simplify it at some level. you know. Yeah.
Or for example, if there are some identifiers, like the customer has some tags or whatever, some IDs that need to be preserved in machine translation, and they can even contain spaces, for example, or whatever, then the MT is bound to screw them up in some, some way or another.
There is a lot of help with that if you know, the current content creator tools, like they are already marking that. So if it is marked, then we are happy, right? It's XML or something. But if not, then, well, you sometimes just keep it for the statistic to do it for you.
Yeah.
Better or worse, you know.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So any other questions related to either the technical bits or the business part of using MT in industry? If there are no further questions, then let's thank Tomáš again.
Thank you.
And we have just about five or no.